there, everybody. It is Thursday, May 9th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Stroll on over to Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter because you wanted us to have an account. Now we have an account, so you have to follow us because it's Twitter where your self-worth is determined by the number of followers you have. So help increase our self-worth. And, of course, go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us because we sure as heck like you. So much ground to cover on this week's show, including a brand new segment that we're going to be debuting a little bit later on. But first, we have our first guest. Darren Achard is an accomplished indie pop singer, songwriter, and producer. His solo artist career began in 2005 with Anything Is Possible, the first album he recorded, produced, and released on Shark Meat, his own label. The album received much critical acclaim and landed him a nomination in the 2006 Out Music Awards for Outstanding New Artist Male. He followed that up with the single and music video Celebrity Du Jour, which was quickly in rotation on MTV Network's Logal channel. And then there was The Rain from London, a four-track EP that is a most enjoyable listen. I have listened to it many a time. He's got a ton of new projects, which we are going to talk all about, and he can certainly rock a bow tie. So, Darren Achard, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much, Ken. It's great to be here. And you just have one more follower on Twitter.
Look at that.
I'm following you.
This is a big day. I'm telling you, the self-worth just went up in that moment. So it's a good thing. Thank you. So much to talk about. We will start with you as we start with all of our musical artists. Tell us why music. What is it about the medium of music that allows you to use your voice to make a difference?
Sure. I really got into music when I was very young. I had the most amazing music teacher, Mr. Hamill. And he kind of let us have a free reign of the music room.
Okay.
So the big thing that he had was glockenspiels, xylophones, and vibraphones. And then one day he brought in this, like, vintage, well, it's vintage now, but at the time it was pretty pretty modern, an Italian, like, synthesizer. I think it was called the Gen SX-1000 or something like
wow.
that.
Wow.
And I was fascinated by this box that had these colored knobs all over it. You could turn them and it would make these most amazing noises. So that was one of my, like, first introductions, and he would let us have free reign of this music room, which we loved to do in the UK because it's so, you know, I don't know whether you've been to the UK, but it rains quite a lot there.
That's what I've heard. I have not yet been. I'm dying to go to Wimbledon.
Oh, you have to go. It's sunny about 2 days of the year. But if you can find those 2 days, it's perfect. So we were, you know, if we could get out of going to the playground at break time and be in this warm music room, that was great for us.
Nice.
So he would let us do that and, you know, explore all these the instruments in the room. And he first taught me about composing. He let us compose this instrumental song, which he then put into a showcase, a song contest down where I grew up.
Okay.
And so we performed this song live on our xylophones and glockenspiels, and it won the contest. So that was kind of a really positive experience of what music could do. You could win things.
You could win things.
Know? Yeah, but really the real heart of music for me is how it makes you feel and how a song can completely change your mood or get you through something that you're feeling, or just the fact that lyrics and music and someone else going through a situation that is similar to what you're going through and you can relate to it through the song and music was just so powerful for me. And I always wanted to be able to write songs that move to people.
Now, my assumption is that you have done a remix of that award-winning song with the glockenspiel and the xylophone.
Yes, that should be out later in the year.
I'm really looking for, it's going to be a hit in all the dance clubs in both Miami, and my assumption is here in Vermont as well, so I'm excited.
I think you're onto something there, Ken. Maybe we should start bringing back the glockenspiel and xylophone.
See, I don't feel it ever left, Darren.
Right.
I don't think it ever left. Now, electropop music, we have tons of singer-songwriters on, and I think we've, you know, carved out quite the little niche of folk artists, but we've not talked about electropop music in quite some time. What is it about that particular genre that gets you going?
I think it's the variety of sound for me. You know, you can create so many interesting and unique sounds with synthesizers and kind of traditional music where you're using acoustic instruments, you're stuck to that sound. It's very set in stone what you can use and what it sounds like. Whereas electronic music, you have such a broad palette of sounds you can choose from. You can just make up sounds. So that kind of intrigues me. Not that I don't shy away from adding in, you know, traditional acoustic instruments into my songs. You'll probably notice guitars and pianos. But I love the beeps and the chirps and the pads and the warm sounds and the ambient sounds and things that you can create with synthesizers.
I used to love my synthesizer. That's got to be in my parents' house somewhere. I got to dig that up.
It's probably worth a ton now. If you have a vintage piece of equipment, everyone's using plugins now. So if you have the actual thing, you should dig that out of the garage or basement.
When you hit the demo button, it used to play Rick Astley's "Never Gonna Give You Up" before it was kitschy. That's got to be worth something, right?
So have to find that. Just for that. Play it on the show.
I used to try to convince people that was me playing, but then they realized I only knew that song, so it wasn't too convincing. So here are the random things that I have learned about you. You ready?
Okay.
I have learned that you are apparently a tropical horticulturist.
How did you find that out?
I have people. Now, that's not a metaphor, right? Like, you actually are a tropical horticulturist.
I think it stems from the fact that we really do not have any decent weather in the UK. So, you know, whenever we went abroad, I used to love palm trees, and just that whole thing reminds me of being on holiday.
Okay.
So, so being in Miami now, I just love tropical plants. So I filled the garden, which now looks like a jungle.
Nice.
With tropical plants. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And then on the other extreme, because apparently you can't get enough of it, you're an extreme weather follower.
How did you?
It's a little bipolar, I must say. You got the tropical horticulturist and then extreme weather follower.
Well, actually, it's kind of similar, because you find that most of the extreme weather is in the tropics. So,
okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm fascinated by hurricanes.
This is all England escapism, it seems.
I think it is.
Well, I was reading all of these articles about you, and I love seeing out artist. And uh-huh. Each article says out artist. And we are still at a point where it's important to put that out there, is it not?
I feel that we shouldn't, but I still think we are at that point where I think we do need to put it out there and be upfront about it. Basically, to be role models, to let people know it's okay, and that we're not really no different from anyone else.
Right.
It's a shame that we still do have to do that, but I feel that it's important too.
Yeah, because you've won a Write Out TV Music and Video Award. As I said, you've been nominated for an Out Music Award. What is that experience like? Because yes, it's about your craft, but it's also because you, quite frankly, are a brave artist who is putting themselves out there as an out artist.
I just feel so privileged to be even nominated in these categories because we have so many talented and really great gay artists out there. So to even be nominated for these awards, it's really an honor for me, and I feel very privileged. And to actually win one of the Write Out TV Awards was really phenomenal and very exciting.
Nice. And I've seen you've given interviews where you have spoken about your, and I quote, amazingly supportive parents. How amazingly supportive are they?
They are incredibly supportive, yeah. They have been really wonderful. They've been behind me, supporting me before I was even, you know, came out to them. But when I did, they stood by me, and they just the most wonderful, caring people. They really are. And I just, you know, I miss them a lot because I don't get to see them with them still being in the UK. But they love to come to Miami again.
I bet.
The sun. We get no sun. So as soon as they're here, they're out there tanning themselves.
They come after the two sunny days in England because they don't want to miss those. They don't want to miss those. Well, let's talk. We're going to talk about all of your projects, but I've been to Miami a number of times. Talk to us about, we haven't talked about Miami in quite some time on the show. What is the gay scene like in Miami?
We have a pretty vibrant gay scene down here. We just had the Miami Beach Pride, which was last month.
Nice.
Which seems bizarre to have a Pride event in March, but it's just so ridiculously hot in June and humid, and it would just be a very uncomfortable experience.
Yeah.
But do it in June. So they've very cleverly done it in March, and this year was the biggest by far. I mean, it's a huge event on Ocean Drive. Loomis Park is completely closed off with all the stands and stores and the stage. We had Adam Lambert perform this year, which
Look
was
at that.
Incredible. Yes.
Now, because the one thing I've heard about Miami, in addition to having been there, and it's been very, very enjoyable, is that there is a little bit of body image pressure there in the South Beach area.
I guess. I mean, I'm not a big muscle guy, but I don't feel like it's that intimidating.
So we thin guys can get by.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think you should come down more often.
I'm on my way. It's not like it's that bright and sunny here in Vermont right now, my friend.
Yeah, I think it has that bad rap for the kind of model image of South Beach.
But yeah.
You know, really anything goes down here. It's pretty open.
All right. See, that's why we do this. We like to clear up those misconceptions. So this is
great.
Exactly. All right. So as I said, so many projects. Let's start with Short Story Long, which is album coming out. Tell us about what this album is going to help us to experience.
This album has kind of been a long time in the works. I'm working on this album completely, wearing every single hat. And it's going to be a huge development, I feel, from the debut album, Anything Is Possible. I feel it's much more in-depth in the songwriting, the lyrics, and I feel it's a lot popular in its appeal.
And what different part of you did it bring forward?
It's funny because a Short Story Long is kind of a play on the fact that it covers a long period of my life, and it's condensed into a little short album. You know, you're condensing so many years into a few songs, so that's kind of the play on the Short Story Long.
Yeah.
So for me, it was there was a lot of topics I touched on of relationships and things that were actually quite a way back, but I felt like I needed to write about them in songs and just put an end to them. And kind of the EP was a start to that with the song I've Moved On and The Rain from London and those kind of topics that I was covering in those songs. But I think people are going to be surprised at some of the songs that are on this album.
All right. Well, one of the tracks on there is getting so much attention, and we'll be playing the song in a few, but it's also the video and everything associated with it. The song You Don't Know Me. What great lyrics, what great press attention you're getting for this.
I'm really excited about the attention this song is getting. The song came about because of all the stuff that was going on kind of during election year, and, you know, marriage equality was a big topic, and there were all these people talking about marriage equality, but it really had no effect on their life whatsoever.
Right.
And yet they had this enormous opinion about how it would affect their life, which really was untrue. And then there were also the people, the women's rights issues that were going on with the abortion issues and all the stuff that was trying to be pushed through the laws in different states to limit women's rights. and various other things, and just the whole hypocrisy about the governors and senators preaching that they're holier than thou, and then we find, you know, the away for the weekend in Argentina,
right,
playing around with some, you know, woman down, you know, all this kind of like
hiking the Appalachian Trail, I think, right, is the euphemism we use.
Just Governor Ultrasound and all these things were just like so, it just seemed like we were bombarded with these people on the TV talking to, I thought they were talking to me particularly about the marriage equality,
right,
stuff, but I'm sure other people felt these topics touched them. And yet, you know, the congressional committee that was made up of all men talking about women's reproductive rights. Well, it's just crazy stuff like that.
But yeah.
I just got really sick of it. So that's what inspired the song. And then the video, we took that a little step further where we were taking eight characters and having them sing the song in the bathroom mirror as if no one was watching them, which is generally what people do, but to bring them in as, you know, wearing certain things and then them changing their appearance and you thinking differently about that person. And so it's kind of the don't judge a book, you
right,
know, kind of thing, but at the same time it was trying to say we're all more similar than different. So
I would like to issue my listeners a challenge. We will link to the video. I issue my listeners a challenge. If you start watching the video and you are frowning and you are not smiling by the end, I will send you a This Show Is So Gay magnet. Just let me know. Send me an email. I don't care what kind of day you're having. If you do not finish the video smiling, I will send you a magnet. I am prepared to back that promise.
That's great. It was a very fun video to make. And what you see on there is, you know, the eight characters and myself is, you know, snippets of that, of what everyone did during the whole song. And we had each character do the whole song that we filmed. And it was just hilarious to watch. It was so funny. And everyone was trying to outdo the next
person. Oh, my gosh.
So we ended up laughing so much during the filming of that video. And
there had to be a part where you were thinking, this is work?
Well, I think by the time we had all those people crammed into this small bathroom and there were balloons and party poppers and streamers and all kinds of stuff, craziness going on, then it's so surreal. But it was a great day. And I think the fun that we all had making the video comes across. Like you say, I don't think I've seen anyone watch it and not be smiling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ear to ear by the end of that video.
If they're not, they get a magnet. So it works out for
right,
everybody.
Exactly.
It works out for everybody. And then if you didn't have enough going on, you thought to yourself, there should be a documentary about me.
Well, I actually did. I'm not that narcissistic.
I didn't think so.
A documentary about me. But I was approached by a brilliant filmmaker down here in South Florida. Hector Sanchez, and we had actually been talking about doing a video for the EP, actually, which didn't come to pass, but he then approached me and said, you know, after our meetings and everything, I'd really like to follow you around and create a mini documentary about you and your music and what it's like being an out artist. And so I said, sure. So we filmed it over nearly 3 months last year. And he's an amazing, and his crew are just really amazing. They actually ended up filming, and he directed the You Don't Know Me video as well.
Oh, nice.
And the documentary just looks beautiful, just the way they frame everything. And it's we actually premiered in February at the Film Slam Film Festival at the Enzian in Orlando.
And it won an award.
Yeah, we came away with the best short film.
Look at that.
So we have two more festivals on the plan at the moment and hopefully adding a couple more. We have Cinema St. Louis Q Fest in June. And we just learned today that we're in the 15 Minutes of Fame Film Festival in Palm Bay in Florida this month. So,
oh, fantastic. How weird is it to see yourself on screen?
Not really that weird.
Yeah.
You would think it would be. I was a little bit nervous about doing that, but actually it wasn't strange at all. But then I was working with such a great team that they made it just very comfortable to do.
Now, does any of your tropical horticulture make an appearance in the film?
I think it does, yeah. In the little opening sequence, I'm sat on my couch and you kind of see all the tropical greenery in the background.
And is there any extreme weather?
No, there's no hurricanes going on at the time,
right.
But it's so funny that you found that information.
It wasn't that hard to find, man. It's out there. It's out there. All right. So you're gonna go to these film festivals. Are you performing at any Pride coming up?
Not this year. I have done that before, and I was hoping to be going over to Cologne and Berlin, but that didn't work out this year.
Okay.
Just because I'm still mixing the album, and I want to have that, you know, finished and out for this summer. So that's going, the album is the top priority right now. And then once that is out, I'll be touring to promote the album.
So much fun. Do we have a date that we're shooting for? Like, this is going to be the album launch date.
I would like to say that, but I don't want to jinx it. So in the summer.
That's good. We could, yeah. We can hold you to the summer. It'll come out, folks, when it comes out. You need to just sit tight and wait.
Yeah.
And so then there are film festivals where folks can go see the documentary. Where can folks go to learn all about the cool things that you're doing?
You can go to my website, which is darrenockert.com. And then, you know, you could go to The Show Is So Gay Twitter and find me as one of the followers and then follow me also.
We can do that in a heartbeat. Now, I would imagine, because one of the pieces about You Don't Know Me was that you put out a call for people to submit their own video content and you put it in the context of bullying. I would imagine you got some pretty cool stuff back.
Yes, and I you know, the whole You Don't Know Me project came about because of the music video on the song, and we launched a website called the YouDon'tKnowMeProject.org.
Mm-hmm.
And on this website, we have we want people to tell their stories, but we're going against this anti-stereotyping. Don't judge a book by its cover. You know, we're all more similar than different, and I feel like the best way for people to learn about other people is for those people to tell their stories. And so this was, and we wanted it to be more encompassing than just bullying, or, you know, it covers everything. So if you are feeling that people don't understand you, here is a chance to make a video and have it featured on the You Don't Know Me Project website. And again, the website is YouDon'tKnowMeProject.org.
Nice. Nice. Well, look, I was watching the video earlier. I've been listening to your music. Man, you really get folks moving, and you are one of those artists who can really raise a spirit. I was already in a good mood, so I didn't necessarily need your help, as I might on some other day. But even so, even with a baseline of being in a pretty good mood, your music just lifts you up to that next level and really gets you going. And I know all of your fans are so appreciative, and we want to expose more folks to your music.
Yeah, and I have to say thank you, Kent, for having shows like this and for being a media outlet for artists like myself, because the outlets are going far between, and I'm really appreciative that you have such a show and that you have me on here to tell my story.
Well, let's call it a partnership. Let's call it a partnership. And let's also just add in the terms that we really do want to hear the remix of that adolescent recording.
The xylophone recording. I will make sure to try and work on that immediately.
I just feel like the next EP should be called Glockenspiels and All. I'm here to help, man. I'm here to help.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Darren, what an absolute treat having you on the show. Just all the best with this album coming out. Everybody, you need to go watch the video. We will link to it. Darren, what a treat.
Thank you so much, Ken. Great talking to you.
I was minding my business. You were on the TV screen. Started talking about me. Blowing smoke from your machine. One more lie in a game of words that never end. One more heart beaten down, but love will never bend. You act high and mighty, then turn away. Push your charade of a better, brighter day. The world has its haters preaching fairy tales. If life's so important, won't you leave mine
you
alone?
You don't know me. You don't know me. You don't know me.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, as promised, we are debuting a brand new segment on this week's show. We're calling it...
And I say love come to you.
And we're going to be doing this segment every single month with our best buddy, Dr. Frankie. Dr. Frankie is the CEO and founder of Little Gay Book, a local personalized boutique matchmaking service. Her area of expertise is finding love for the LGBT community. She is a doctor of clinical psychology, a nationally recognized relationship expert, and a coach. She is my sister separated at birth and one of our favorite guests. Dr. Frankie, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you for having me back. I'm happy to be here.
Your own segment with your own theme music.
So excited.
So exciting. So exciting. So just to recap for folks, you can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com, and right there on the homepage, you see this big heart, and you can click on the heart, and that will automatically generate an email from you to us with the subject line, Ask Dr. Frankie, and that is where this week's questions come from. So everyone should go do that, should they not?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Especially challenging questions.
We love challenging questions, and we have some. We have some challenging questions for you. Are you ready to get started? We have four amazing questions.
I am. Let's hear them.
Question number one, and I thought that someone might have sent this as a joke, but I actually think it's fantastic, and I think we'll give folks a sense of what it is that you do. Someone wrote in these five words, what am I doing wrong?
What am I doing wrong?
I think this begs the question of when someone comes to you and when they seek out your help and they're just not even sure about why they have not yet found love. Where do you start?
You know, I think a lot of people come to me with that question, like, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing online dating. Everybody tells me to get on and do online dating, and I'm having a horrible experience. What am I doing wrong? Is my picker broken?
Right.
I get that sometimes, right? So, you know, I think that people often think that they know... Sort of, they know what they want, but they don't often know what they need. So I help them figure out what they need, you know, the difference between what they want and what they need. And there is a difference oftentimes. So I think we have an ideal in our minds, and sometimes that ideal can sort of take us off the sort of a path that will be
yeah.
more successful, you
yeah.
know? So I challenge people. That's part of my job, is to sort of challenge your thinking and your ideals and your must-haves and your deal-breakers, and together we come up with something a little more realistic that will create more success for you.
What I am sensing in this question, too, and I would imagine something that you encounter, is some level of frustration.
Absolutely. Yes, dating is really can be really hard, and is absolutely frustrating. I think if it wasn't, then I wonder if, I mean, I think that's kind of part of it.
Yeah.
And if it isn't a little frustrating, I would wonder if you're not being sort of going through the full process. You know, you're jumping in too quickly into something. Because I think that it's, you know, you want to be careful. You want to be selective, but you don't want to be too selective where you're weeding too many people out, you know, and limiting yourself. But it absolutely can be a frustrating process. I think that's kind of a normal part of the process, is to feel frustration at certain points.
So you help them realize there's nothing wrong with them. They just need to change some circumstances.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They just need to kind of be, and I think it's helpful to sort of have somebody to bounce your ideas off of, somebody who's an expert in the field that sort of knows what it's like, knows what the challenges are, and can be a reality check for you. I think a lot of us sometimes need to just sit down and have somebody. It could be like a family member or a friend also that can help you figure that out. But somebody you really can trust that isn't afraid to be blunt and direct with you.
Nice. Nice. All right. So this gives us a sense of where we can start. Question number two. And people are going to think that I asked these questions. It was not me. People actually submitted them, though I wanted them to do cute names like they do for Dear Abby. But we're not yet at that point, I think, with folks. These were all unsigned. So someone wrote in, Dr. Frankie, is it really possible to make something long distance work?
Yes and no. So I think initially, yes, you can definitely maintain a long-distance relationship. I think, you know, it seems to me up to a year, I think it's doable. After that, I mean, I think it becomes really difficult to maintain the connection, the chemistry, you know what I mean, to cope with the distance. It becomes kind of burdensome at that point after a year. I think, you know, after 6 months, 8 months, it's still doable, it's workable, and then you get to a year and you're like, okay, well, I want to advance this relationship, but the distance is keeping us from doing that.
I've gone online and I've seen some of the dating profiles there on some of our favorite sites, and folks will put, you know, I'm totally open to a long distance thing, but then you read elsewhere in their profile that they're fully entrenched in where they're living, which just screams to me, okay, this person's probably not willing to relocate, which after some amount of time, that conversation might come up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I meet people who say, you know, they are open to a long-distance relationship, but they're not willing to relocate, which means that the other person needs to relocate, you know? So maybe that's what you're seeing there, Ken.
That's a tough way to start a relationship.
Yeah, pretty one-sided. Yeah, it's my way or no way.
Yeah. Although I would imagine that you have clients, many, many of whom say it's my way or no way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
And that's where you say, no, no, you have to do it the Dr. Frankie way. That's the real way.
Yes, I try. And there's some things I'm not willing to budge on, but certainly I'm pretty flexible on many, many fronts. So, yeah, I try to, you know, I want to be successful in matching them, and I do the best that I can within the constraints of sort of who I'm working with. Because a lot of us have, like I said, you know, there's some things that we can be rigid on.
Right.
And, you know, I'll do my best to try to help them become a little more fluid or flexible around that.
Have you said to people, I'm sorry, there are just too many deal breakers here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I want to say at least once a month that comes up, yes.
And are they receptive to that?
Most are.
Yeah.
Most really are, you know. I think it comes across fairly quickly early on that I'm doing this work because I'm really passionate about it, and I really, really want my clients to find amazing partners. So I think they know that it's coming from a non-critical, non-judgmental place, and they're pretty open. Occasionally I get somebody who will kind of argue with me.
Yeah.
You know.
And then what do you say? Because I would be nervous. I would never argue with you.
I know, I'm so scary. you know, I would say you contacted me because you knew that, you know, I'm somebody who's very aware of this process. I'm a professional matchmaker. I'm a psychologist. I am a relationship and dating coach, and you're contacting me because I'm an expert. So trust me in this process when I, you know, am suggesting that we do this a little differently.
Yeah. I had a student in my office last year, I think it was, who was just hysterically crying and totally distraught. And in the course of the conversation, they were saying, oh, but, you know, my boyfriend makes me so happy. And I just kind of said, yeah, it doesn't seem like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes, I mean, it's like our perspective, right? We're outside of their body and mind, and we're looking in saying,
right,
oh, this doesn't look good. And from their perspective, you know,
yeah,
they're seeing it differently. So I think that's what I'm saying. It's so important to kind of have somebody that you can talk to about, you know, your dating experience or your must-haves or your ideals that will be honest with you.
Love it. Love it. All right. Question number three comes to us from a lesbian. I know it because it's in the question. Dear Dr. Frankie, my friends invited me to go on a lesbian cruise, and they told me that I will find love there. I find that to be really implausible. Who is correct?
I have to admit that I have been on my, certainly on a fair share of lesbian trips, with Sweet, which was really, really fun. And people definitely met people that they ended up having relationships with. So I think you can absolutely meet women on these cruises, like Olivia or Sweet. You want to just be careful of kind of think about how old you are and which company is better to go with, because one is kind of younger and one's older. But they have all these activities for singles, and they, you know, you're never really alone. There's a singles coordinator, which I was for Sweet for a couple of years.
Wow.
And I got to entertain all the singles, and I made sure that everybody met each other, that you weren't sitting alone at a meal or, you know, at the dance club standing alone. I was always pulling, you know, folks in to dance with each other and stuff like that. So I am a big, huge supporter of going on those trips on those, you know, on Sweet or Olivia, on the lesbian cruises, because I think it can help, you know, expand your network, meet new people. You never know who you'll meet. They, you know, have friends, that sort of thing. So stay open-minded around that, because I definitely think it can work.
We've had Judy from Olivia Travel on, and we've had Shannon from Sweet on. How should people go about researching which is the right cruise for them? Because there are a number of different options. So I'm hearing that age is definitely a factor.
Yes, yes. And there's also land trips. So they do cruises, but they also do, like, you know, resort vacations.
Okay.
So for those who don't like cruises. But, you know, I would say, just going to throw some numbers out there, I would say, you know, Sweet has women between the ages of 21 to 45. And then maybe Olivia. I haven't been on an Olivia cruise, but I know that it's, you know, tends to draw an older crowd. And I don't know exactly what the age is, but yeah. I would say anywhere between, you know, any 40 onward, maybe, or 45 onward.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Now, gay men's cruises, I have to tell you, I would never go on. And I have been invited on many a gay cruise, and for so many reasons. First of all, because I don't accept boats as a valid form of transportation. So there's that. That's kind of my baseline, and it wouldn't work out. But then, I mean, even the advertising of it are just... I feel like they should put, come on this gay cruise, we will endorse your body dysmorphia. Because it just looks like there's no way that anyone not Abercrombie-ish is going to be comfortable.
You know, different, totally different, totally different animal, right?
Yeah.
Gay, male, you know, cruises, totally different. So this, I mean, there's a lot of different body types, different styles, different races, ethnicities, you know, I, especially on Sweet, because I can speak from my own experience of going on Sweet. So no, it's not the same experience. And it's also not a big, like, sex fest. But I've heard stories about how, you know, the gay cruises can get crazy. So, you know, there are people who are interested in partying hard on these trips, and then there are people that just want to kind of relax and take
right.
it easy, that aren't big into drinking and dancing the night away. So I think there's a nice mixture of interests, you know.
Yeah, because I have to say, if the question said my friends invited me to go on a gay cruise and told me I would find love there, I would be instantly skeptical, and I too would think it was implausible.
You know what? I think it might be different for men.
Yeah.
On those gay trips. I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have personal experience, and I bet you have more, you know, just from your friends and stuff that have been on them. You can speak to it. But I have a feeling that it's probably very different.
Where the word cruise has all types of meanings there.
Exactly.
On the Gay Men's Cruise. All right. Question number four. Oh, I love this one. Dear Dr. Frankie, and I love that there's no preamble. They just jump right into it, which is great. Dear Dr. Frankie, he keeps talking negatively about his parents, but when I agree, he gets angry, and he expects me to get excited when we're about to hang out with them. Help.
Yeah, so this is an issue I think a lot of couples deal with at different points, right? Like, we share all of our personal traumas with our partner about our childhood and how our parents have failed us and how our parents frustrate us. And then we expect our partners to like our parents or family members, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to sort of juggle those feelings. But I think it's important to sort of stay in the moment now. Like, I feel like we have a lot of history and past traumas and disappointments that we sort of share with our partners. So we've got to be careful to sort of stay grounded in today, here and now, right? Us parents tried our very best. We didn't always do a great job, and it sounds like they still have a relationship, right?
Right.
His parents are still in his life. So I think focus on the positive. Focus on the positive aspects of the relationship today, and not harbor too much on the past and those experiences. So I totally hear that, and I think it comes up a lot, actually, in the work that I do with couples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one of those you got to be, if you're looking long term, you're probably going to see their parents quite a few times.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I don't think it's uncommon for folks to feel uncomfortable with their in-laws, or just, you know, not really digging their in-laws so much. But it's
right.
kind of like you marry into it. There's not much you can do about it. But focus on the positive aspects. Like, find one endearing quality about his mom or dad and hang on to that.
Tightly. Hang on tightly, yeah. People.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like it's your lifeline. You might need it. You might need
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And that actually makes me, you know, bring up another point, and the idea that, you know, when you have a fight with your partner and you call your best friend to tell him or her about what happened and what your partner said and how upset he or she made you feel, and then your friend is like unsure about how he or she feels about your partner, right? So
right.
I always say be careful. Like let a little time pass, decompress before you vent to your best friend about all the crap that your partner just said or did to you.
Right.
Because
right.
it's hard for them to filter through that and continue to have sort of a neutral or a positive perspective on who your partner is, because they're hurting you or they've hurt you.
These things have lasting effect. They have lasting effect. Well, that's what people wrote in with. I must say I have a couple questions of my own. I'm seeing the word, and I love this word, and I would love to just hear your thoughts on it. As I was looking at littlegaybook.com, which everybody should go to and book their appointment, I'm seeing the word committed. And I think that's one of those words that I would probably tell my students, make sure you have a conversation with each other so that you're on the same page about what that word means. How do we go about defining that word?
I think your point is a good one. I think, you know, we might have a different, each of us might have a different idea of the definition of being committed, right? I mean, some people are in committed relationships that are open relationships.
Right.
For one person, you know, they may think that that's not a committed relationship because it's open, because they practice polyamory, for example.
Right.
Whereas, you know, that couple might say, we're absolutely committed. This is my primary partner. We live together. We share a life together. There are certain conditions that we agree to in our relationship, which includes an open relationship, but that doesn't mean we're not committed. So I think having a conversation about what commitment means to you and your partner and making sure you're on the same page is really, really important.
Nice. Nice. And then I'm so curious, and you and I actually have not really talked about this before, as we're looking towards possibly now in Delaware, that the Delaware Senate is scheduled to take a final vote on marriage equality this week. How has all of this surrounding marriage equality affected the work that you do?
You know, I'm not seeing it really directly in my matchmaking. I think that people that I've brought together have had, you know, commitment ceremonies and have become domestic partners. And, you know, it's not coming up so much directly in the work that I'm doing right now, but I think people are really in the community are so interested in the politics around it and what's coming up. And I've been trying to capture it on, you know, my Twitter feed
yeah.
and on my Facebook pages. And I know a couple right now. One of them is American. The other is German.
Mm-hmm.
And They just went to Washington, D.C. and knocked on every, you know, political person in power's door.
That's what you need to do.
Trying to say, like, you know, my partner is going to be basically deported
yeah.
in 6 months. And we've been together for, you know, 6 or 7 years. And I can't remember. I think it's 6 or 7 years. And what we need, you know, what are we going to do? This is, you know, so I think people are very, very interested in the community and are trying, you know, to really, we're all staying really positive. And I absolutely think it's going to impact the work that I do down the line. But right now I haven't seen it directly, you know, I haven't seen it come up aside from, you know, when we talk about politics and
okay.
how people get involved in the community.
So you have been to the commitment ceremonies of people that you have matched up?
I have. Yes. I have.
Do you walk around the ceremony and say, yeah, I did this?
No.
Why?
No, I don't.
I would do that.
You know, people get really, I mean, they're really, it's private, you know, and they get uncomfortable.
People and their boundaries.
So I really delicately, you know, walk around that issue. If they bring it up, I'm so proud to say that I was a part of the process. But if they don't, then I definitely don't.
There had to have been a toast at one of these where they mentioned you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. But more often than not, they don't.
All right. I guess
so
I won't.
I'm just like, you know, the secret sort of like, you know, I think their closest family members know. And then everybody else probably knows a different story.
Now, this might be the antithesis of everything that you do. But were there ever any that you were like, wow, I really am not sure that even I saw this working out?
Well, actually, that reminds me. Recently, a friend got together with a catch, and a catch is somebody in my database.
Okay.
And, you know, the catch disclosed to my friend that she's in my database, right, because of confidentiality. I couldn't tell my friend, hey, you're dating a woman that's in my catch pool. Anyway, they both looked to me recently, a couple weeks ago. Actually, we were at Diner Shore in Las Vegas, and they looked to me and said, "How come you didn't set us up?" I said, "Because you're the oddest couple I could ever imagine." Like, I would never in a million years have thought the two of you would hit it off.
But yeah. Still, at your ceremony, I would like you to thank me and your toast.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now, I would imagine that that event in Vegas is kind of, you know, in some ways like one of these cruises where, again, I would feel overwhelmed by that many folks around.
You know, it was kind of, I feel like it was not, people were in their own little cliques. It was a little disappointing. I had never been to Diner Shore Las Vegas, nor have I ever been to Diner Shore in Palm Springs. But this was my first Diner Shore experience. And I found it to be kind of a bummer in that women just did not really engage with each other unless they were, you know, you were part of their group. So it felt a little bit like I was in my high school gym.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Whereas, like, I found, like, a sweet trip is so, there's so much that's collaborative where you're engaging in activities together. The vibe is really different where you become bonded with everybody over the course of the week. This was like different events, like a few different parties. You don't see, you know, there's so many people, you don't see them again. There's not much overlap.
Right.
So no, I would say that I wouldn't look at Diner Shore and think, oh, that's going to be what a Sweet or Olivia experience will be like.
There you go.
Different.
Okay. Next year, see, we have Mariah Hansen, who owns Club Skirts, the Dinah. She runs it. She's on the show every single year. We love having her on. She talks all about the Dinah. And every single year, she tries to get me to go, but I feel like it would be really overwhelming for me for so many reasons. Will you go with me next year? We'll go to
the
Palm Springs one, and we'll have a table, and we'll set up matchmaking sessions, and we'll do something. It'll be fun.
That would be really fun. I would go with you, just so you can.
Okay.
I'm afraid of it otherwise.
No, I have not. I've never asked anybody else to go with me. Did I ask the Indigo Girls to go with me? No, I did not. But you, I feel like we would have a blast.
Special. Yes, I would love that.
All right.
Let's start planning it now.
I'm totally setting it up. Okay, All right. So, folks, this is what you do. We're going to do this segment once a month. So stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com, click on the big heart, submit your questions, and they will be read on the air. And by the way, you can submit your names as well and get a little shout out because that's fun too, unless the question's really embarrassing, and then I might edit your name out because that might work out okay for you. Dr. Frankie, always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
Until next month. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have a little bit of time left with you on this week's episode, so let's get to some LGBT news and views. A little bit of a follow-up to last week's story. So we told you about Smith College and Calliope Wong. Calliope Wong, a trans woman who applied to Smith, and Smith didn't even read her application. They just rejected it and said, you are checked off on some form as being a male, so we're not even going to look at the merits. I challenged you, listeners, to reach out to Smith to make your voice heard. And certainly the students at Smith and alums and community members there made their voices heard with a huge petition. I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post that a lot of you commented on, which I very much appreciated, saying, come on, folks, we got to redefine this word gender. Well, Smith College has listened to its own community, and I would imagine some of the outcry from surrounding and worldwide communities, and they have formed a committee. They have formed a committee of students and staff and faculty to look at their admissions decisions. And folks wrote to me right afterwards and they said, look, there was change. There's change and they're creating this committee. And I'm really happy about it, but I also work in colleges. It's what I do for a living. So I see a lot of committees being created, and I'll just say that I'll be a little bit more excited when I see the change that comes from all of this. So, yay for creating a committee. Now let's look at the output, and then that would be great. So, yay for Smith, but let's see what happens next. It was 1 year ago this week that President Obama went on television and he said, my views on marriage equality have evolved. I personally, and he used that word personally, which is very important in this context, I personally support marriage equality. And in that year, my gosh, what a year it has been, culminating just for now, because it's going to keep growing, so culminating right this second with Delaware. Delaware has now become the 11th state to legalize same-sex marriage after a lengthy debate earlier this week in the state Senate and the surprise votes of two lawmakers. A half hour after the 12-9 Senate vote, Governor Jack Markell signed the legislation into law on the main stairs in the lobby of Legislative Hall. Democratic Senator Bethany Hall Long and Republican Senator Catherine Cloutier provided the swing votes in favor of the legislation. Cloutier was the lone Republican yes vote in the Senate and one of two in the General Assembly as a whole. According to the bill, Delawareans will be able to enter into same-sex marriages effective July 1st. The law provides a mechanism for converting existing same-sex civil unions established in Delaware to marriages. Delaware, the 11th state with gay marriage. So we're getting there. And they say that Minnesota is next. Minnesota is apparently on the horizon, and Illinois. So Minnesota and Illinois. And so we're breaking out of this New England area and moving into the Midwest. So keeping our eyes on that. As I said on last week's show, it was all about Jason Collins. Jason Collins coming out, and the stories just kept going and going. And it's really been what a joy to read all of these stories because there hasn't been a ton of blowback. One interesting piece was that some folks in the NBA were saying, oh yeah, they're, you know, this is a big deal. There's never been gay people on teams. And Charles Barkley has been doing some interviews and he's been saying, what the heck are you talking about? We've all played with gay players. He said that was his quote. We've all played with gay players. He said this during an installment of TNT's Inside the NBA. That was a week ago. Then this week, he was a guest on the Dan Patrick Show and he elaborated on those comments and he said, quote, yeah, of course I did, when he was asked if he had played with a gay teammate. He said, yeah, of course I did. Everybody did. Everybody played with a gay teammate, Dan, and it's no big deal. First of all, I think it's an insult to gay people to think they're trying to pick up on their teammates, but everybody's played with a gay teammate. It's obviously discussed privately because the problem is, Dan, unless someone tells you they're gay, you can't say anything about them being gay until somebody has the courage, and I think it takes great courage to come out. It's kind of an unspoken word, to be honest with you. So that was Charles Barkley on the Dan Patrick Show. Some great quotes there. And it keeps going with folks in sports coming out. There have been a rash of different individuals coming out since Jason Collins announced his coming out. And one really notable one, Kevin Grayson, who is a former college football star. He has come out. He said, quote, just because you're gay doesn't mean you can't be the athlete you want to be. Doesn't mean you can't be a star. Doesn't mean you can't go out there and go just as hard as anybody else, if not harder. He was a decorated high school football player. He began playing for the University of Richmond as a wide receiver for the Spiders. He helped the college team win the national title in 2008 and remained second on the list of all-time receivers in receptions, yards, and touchdowns. He unfortunately has a torn ligament in his knee, which kept him from being drafted by an NFL team, but he went on to play professionally in Italy. They have professional football teams apparently in Italy with the Parma Panthers. Who knew? And the Parma Panthers, they helped win the Italian Football League. So a notable coming out there in football and in sports in general. There was one story that there's no way you guys saw it because it was just so random and it just popped up for me, but I really want to cover it. It was off of the Kotaku website, which is a gamer's guide. That's Kotaku.com, and it's for gamers. And folks go on there. It looks to be very user-controlled where you can go on there and review different games that are coming out. And so one of the reviewers, Patricia Hernandez, posted a review, a preview of a new game coming out called Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. Okay, so I think it's a shoot 'em up game. I'm not really sure that I like games with superheroes, but I don't necessarily know other games. So I don't know a ton about Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. So in this review preview, Patricia Hernandez writes about an exchange between two characters in the game. And so one of them tries to wake up the other one. So it's the two characters are Spider and Rex. Okay, so Spider says, wakey, wakey, and then an expletive. Ops says there's a delay in the feed. They need to recalibrate you. We'll just say that. Then Rex says, me? And Spider says, well, it ain't me because I'm near perfect. Men want to be me. And then the other character, Rex, says, and you want to be with men. Yeah, I get it. And then the scene pauses on Spider's face for a second before Spider says something else. So this reviewer, Patricia Hernandez, this user on Kotaku.com, acknowledges, and rightly so, that it's a put down. The one character is implying that the other character is gay, and it's a put down, and it pauses the other guy in his tracks. And the title of this piece is called "The Gay Joke in Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon is Harmless or Is It?" It's just this really interesting commentary from a user that, hey, why is there a gay joke in this game? And of course, as I've said a million times over on the show Is So Gay in the past 4+ years, all the drama's going down in the comment section. And folks are going off like crazy, whatever, this is harmless, it's just a joke. And I'm fascinated by this. I know so little about the gaming culture. What I do know is that there are a ton of young users of ton young gamers out there. And so a gay joke to some of these people commenting on this site might be harmless, but why are we normalizing? And I thank you, Patricia, for highlighting this. Why are we normalizing a gay joke in a game? Why are we doing that? Why are we saying that that's okay? And so read the piece. You go to Kotaku.com. That's Kotaku.com and type in the name of this piece, which is "The Gay Joke in Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon is Harmless or Is It?" And Patricia actually talks to the folks who created the game, and it's a kind of a hilarious exchange. So check that out. Well, that about does it for this week's episode, because we are out of time. So you can, of course, follow us on Twitter. We want more Twitter followers. Go to Facebook and like us on Facebook. Just type in "This Show Is So Gay." Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. And again, right there on the homepage, click Ask Dr. Frankie. Just click that big heart and you can submit your relationship questions. And as you just heard, Dr. Frankie will answer them on the air. What a fun segment that was. Thanks, of course, to Darren Ockert, who was on earlier in the show. Get out there, folks. Go do whatever it is that you do best to make a difference in this world, whether it is using your Glockenspiel and remixing a song from that. Good job, Darren. Or you are providing relationship advice if you're, you know, qualified to do it and you have a good ear for such things. We don't want just everyone doing that. Whatever it is that you do to raise up the voices of those around you. And of course, while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Could do much better. Better than what? Hey, I should go as GoPro. Bulletproof 100, your favorite alcohol. She said too much of a good thing, it will kill you. You're cheaper than a rack of stolen jackets, a parody of someone else you'd like to be. You speak of Deepak Chopra and of course world peace. A guru in the making down in Sesame Street.